Hello and welcome into this edition of Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. It has been a busy day. Yes, it's been a day at the Travelers Championship. Rex, you were finally headed home after what seems like 3 weeks on the road, a potentially felonious act as it relates to a certain rental car. We'll get into that story at the end of the podcast. But look, this is the meeting with CEO Brian Rolapp of the PGA Tour that we've all been anticipating ever since he made the announcement at the Players' Championship. But yes, significant and substantial changes are coming to the PGA Tour in 2028. There's a lot to get through. I think the press release related to these changes was about 4 pages long. We're going to get into sort of the main headlines and break each down separately. But Rex, if I had to ask you sort of a 30,000-foot view of what happened on Tuesday and what was approved by the PGA Tour Policy Board, how would you sum it up?
Well, and I don't mean this as in what the PGA Tour has done is underwhelming, but I think what happened Tuesday was underwhelming. And I think you would probably agree with this. As two reporters who were on the ground, no one was surprised by almost anything that was laid out in those 4 pages or the 45 minutes he spent with players or the hour he spent with the media. We've talked about this for the better part of 8 months. We have an idea of where they were heading. It's going to be a two-track system. It's going to be a championship series. It's going to be a challenger series. Championship Series is obviously going to be the one where the stars play. That's going to be 22 to 24 events. It's going
to include...
We're getting
into each thing separately.
No. All right. You're right. Yeah, I won't dig into that. But I think from the 30,000-foot view, you interviewed a bunch of players today. I interviewed a bunch of players today. None of them were shocked. There was nothing that stood out that stunned anyone. Part of that is because we kind of knew a lot of the details going into this. I think going forward is where it's going to get interesting, because now he's laid out essentially a blueprint. This is what I want. Now you have to go out and implement this. You need to go out and make it work. So from a news reporting standpoint, it was a great day. I think I love the idea that we were finally able to put on paper something that we've been talking about for so long, but there's so many details that we don't know.
Yeah, we're going to get into that at the end of sort of the open questions, what we're hoping to hear, what we're expecting to hear the next time Brian Rolapp meets with the media, which is going to be in August at the Tour Championship. I to echo those sentiments, the players I talked to said, yes, we had already been hearing these things. This was just sort of formalizing and finalizing what we'd already heard. Maverick McNeely, a key member of the Future Competitions Committee, told me it was actually somewhat repetitive, and it has been repetitive over the past couple of months, because one of the hallmarks Brian Rolapp's tenure as CEO has been transparency. There is no open seat. There's no secretive elements to what they're trying to do. He had 14 FCC meetings, 3 PAC meetings, 4 PAC subcommittee meetings, 6 player meetings, 1 agent meeting, 121 players were spoken to, and 78 players one-on-one. So yes, the PGA Tour membership was looped into this. Doesn't mean I have to necessarily agree with it, but no one was surprised by what transpired on Tuesday. All right, let's break down each of these sections separately, because they are significant in their own way. One of the biggest things, obviously, was this unveiling of the Championship Series. We've been calling it Track 1. We've been calling it Tier 1. The working title for now is the Championship Series. As you mentioned, that's going to be roughly 23 to 24 events. That includes the major championships. That includes the Players' Championship. That includes whatever's going to become of the PGA Tour postseason. And that includes a cup event, whether that's the Ryder Cup or the President's Cup. Big changes here. They're going to, quote, open big from February through August, 120-man fields on average, and at least $20 million purses are going to be maintained as well. I think the big key difference, and we've seen this sort of been winnowing down over the past couple years, it was 125 to keep your card. Now it's 100 to keep your card. Beginning in 2028, it is going to be 90 players are going to be eligible to maintain their playing privileges for the following year. So all of that is a lot to absorb, a lot to consume. What do you think of the Championship Series for the top-tier players on the PGA Tour that's going to be unveiled?
I mean, I think this is the this is what he's trying to get to. This is sort of the crown jewel. This is what's going to make everything work. If he gets this right, everything else behind it is going to work. And I think on a couple of fronts, you can sit and argue that he got it right with field size. You and I have probably argued since the beginning of the quote-unquote elevated events all the way through the signature events that whatever it is they're doing now doesn't work. 120, and that's flexible, actually. You and I have been told that it might go all the way up to 130. It's based on what they need to do. You probably have 130 players that will be in this championship series event. And I can imagine a scenario where maybe not all of them, but you end up with 128 player fields with a cut. I think that's significant. When you talk about the meritocracy and what we're trying to get to here, all of those things register. I think it's important to point out that they've already got essentially 10 regular season champion series events, and we can go over those. It seems pretty obvious what those are. So five are the outliers right now, and that's the fascinating conversation. Who are the five now who are scrambling, trying to get the tour to make sure they're one of the anointed ones? So I think by and large, he got it right. The biggest thing I think the Future Competitions Committee and Brian Rolapp got right, and you and I have talked about this probably for the better part of a decade, is that the playoffs never fit golf. It was always a name that just felt awkward. It was always confusing to fans. It never quite felt right. They were big events during a time of year when the PGA Tour probably needed big events, but it never really registered as what they were trying to do. It seems as if what this will do is move on from that. What they're going to do is crown a regular season champion. They're going to
hold on. That's one old section. You're jumping ahead to something. You're too excited. We're focusing strictly on the championship series. Why do you keep jumping ahead?
The playoffs are part of the championship series. I don't understand how you're breaking this down. Maybe we should have had a production meeting. By the way, we should have touched on this. By the way, I also need to point out that apparently the audio was bad on Sunday's podcast.
It still is.
Is my audio bad? Is that what you're telling me? Do I need to talk louder? Powerful.
Nope. It sounds terrible. The volume's terrible. We
have it turned up all the way to 10. I don't understand.
Audio experts. We don't have the audio people on this call. We're hoping to fix the issue by the time we reconvene on Sunday evening. So apologies.
I'll talk louder.
In advance for some of the audio issues. As you mentioned, I think it's going to be most compelling, Rex, to see what those remaining five tournaments are, according to the PGA Tour executives, according to Brian Rolapp. There is a lot of competition. I had no shortage of suitors for people who want to get in sort of what would be, I think, best described as the aspirational part of the PGA Tour for the best and the brightest. I think some big picture takeaways for this championship series are that if you're a fan, you are now going to know when the PGA Tour is on, sort of the schedule and the calendar, and you're going to know the tournaments because those are Brian Rolapp is expecting to be locked into multi-year agreements. And you're also going to know by and large that all of the best players are going to be competing in those tournaments when you do sign up. You don't have sort of the wishy-washy swing five, next 10, who's coming up, who's coming down, conditional status, all of those sorts of murky things. I think Keith Mitchell, Rex, is a perfect example of this, a player who would certainly be among the top 90 on the PGA Tour and keeping his card and being a part of a championship series moving forward. But this year, he said it's really been difficult to plan a schedule. He never knows where exactly he's going to be playing. He never knows if he's going to be into the elevated events. He told me at Golf's Longest Day, the U.S. Open Final Qualifier, that he typically has three or four different flights booked each and every Sunday. He just says it's a stressful way to live, not knowing where I'm going to be playing and against whom I'm going to be playing. So that sort, I think really simplifies the PGA Tour product for fans, which again was one of those three pillars. There certainly are some remaining questions as it relates to the championship series, not just the tournaments that are going to be played. We're hoping to get some answers on that, and the PGA Tour is expecting that to be finalized by the first quarter of 2027, but also the eligibility, Rex, and who is actually going to be a part of what they're expecting to be about a 130 player group. That's going to involve tournament winners and the exemptions for that. Is it going to be 2 years, 3 years, 5 years for winning a major championship? How do you recognize those career milestones? 10-time PGA Tour winner, 20-time PGA Tour winner. How are those players in terms of their exemptions into the championship series as well as the DP World Tour? Is it the top performer in the Race to Dubai? The top three, the top five. Right now it's the top 10. Thank you to the PGA Tour. So all of these eligibility questions are something they're going to be hammering out in the next couple of months. The second biggest topic, Rex, is the Challenger Series, which is going to be below the Championship Series. That is expected to be 20 events, 144-man fields, $4 million purses, and 20 players promoted at the end of the season, similar to what you see for the Korn Ferry Tour. So when Roy McIlroy says a couple weeks ago that this Challenger Series is really just a glorified Korn Ferry Tour, do you think he has a point?
No, he absolutely has a point. And I brought this up today and throughout the course of our reporting. The PGA Tour has always had a two-tiered system, at least as far as long as I've been covering it. There was always World Golf Championships and the Arnold Palmer Invitational and Memorial and these events that stood above the others. They're just codifying it now. They're just putting it on paper and making it a little bit cleaner and a little bit clearer. I'll go back to when Tripp Eisenhower played on the PGA Tour. He was one of my best sources, but I would always tease him that he played the Tripp Eisenhower Tour and Tiger Woods played a much different tour. And that's just the facts. If you go back and look at it, it's always been this way. So laying it out on paper, showing players exactly what to expect. Look, you don't want to be on the Challenger Series. You would much rather be in the Championship Series, but at least now you have an idea, to your point, exactly what the expectation is. All right, I have 20 events to find a way to play my way up into the Championship Series. I think that's good for the players. I think that's good for the fans. It's good for the partners as well. They know exactly what the product is they're going to get. All that being said, I will circle back around real quick. And if I'm jumping ahead, please cut me off again, because apparently you had a rundown in your mind that you didn't choose to tell me about before this. There is going to be an element of this going forward. Is this sustainable financially? $20 million purses, and I've been told by people at the PGA Tour, they actually want to continue to work their way up. Like $25 million isn't out of the question. I can imagine those 22 to 24 events or 23 events, whatever the case may be. There are sponsors lined up to do that. I mean, my guess is they don't roll this out if they haven't already gotten commitments from, let's say, the current eight signature events. And as you pointed out, two playoff events and the players, we can start connecting the dots right now. I guess my question is, what happens on the Challenger Series, the Tier 2 events? Can you get enough? Can you get 20 sponsors to be, okay, that's the field I'm getting. That's the exposure I'm going to get. I'm going to go ahead and buy off on that as an investment. That's a huge question.
It's certainly a huge question. I think with the price tag attached, it's certainly more palatable. And if you're looking for comparisons of what a $4 million purse would look like on this Challenger Series as part of the PGA Tour two-tier system, typical purses on the Korn Ferry Tour are $1 million. So it is a step up, at least in that regard. As it relates to mid-season promotion, the only option for a player who gets hot on this Challenger Series could potentially play his way to the Championship Series is if he wins two times on the circuit. At that point, it'd be an instant promotion, battlefield promotion, however you want to describe it. The venues, I think, Rex, are going to be very interesting for this, as well as these are going to be familiar venues to the PGA Tour fans and tournaments that we've come to expect. I think the big thing is which players are actually going to be competing in this. And if you're a golf fan, why would you tune in to see what is essentially a better version of the PGA Tour, or excuse me, of the Korn Ferry Tour?
That's good. I did want to correct you real quick. It is two events. You win two events on the Challenger Tour and you do get that promotion to the Championship Series. However, if you were to win a major championship, which of course they would have access to the US Open, the Open Championship. So that's also an option.
I'm banking on those players not winning major championships, because those players most likely are not even in the major championships, barring some sort of local
qualifying. But the qualifying for the major championships will not change. The qualifying for the U.S. Open remains the same, my guess is, for the PGA Championship, certainly for the Open Championship, so that you have that opportunity to play your way in. So that also gives them the opportunity. And you're right, our colleague Brently Romine actually did a good job on this. Go check it out on Twitter. He kind of pointed out what, in theory, the top 10 players at a Challenge Series event would look like. And they're players that you and I know. They're players that you and I would probably keep up on. It's Pearson, it's Adrien Dumont-Deschassart. It's a lot of these players who play on the PGA Tour, but can you sell a sponsor on that? Can you sell a media partner on that? My guess is Golf Channel is going to be very much in the middle of that conversation, but is that going to be good enough to commit to, we're going to air all 20 of these? Are we only going to air, there's going to be seven, I think is the number, of those events, of the secondary events that will be standalone events, that you won't have Championship Series events that week. Those are going to be quote-unquote elevated, whatever that means. More money, more points. They're going to try to turn those in to something special. I can see those turning into something that's worth watching. I guess the part that I get hung up in, and we've talked about this, and I still don't understand it, is if you're a Tier 1 player, if you're qualified for the Championship Series, you can't play Challenger Series events. Scottie Scheffler, for example, couldn't play, in theory, the events in Dallas if they were not Tier 1 events. That, to me, is missing an opportunity here. I understand that the tour is trying to make this as clean as possible, but you could have elevated those events. You could have elevated those fields. My guess is if you were to ask the players who were going to be in those fields, yeah, they'd love the opportunity to compete against a Scottie Scheffler in Dallas, if that's the case, because you get an opportunity to prove yourself against the world's best. So that I still don't quite understand.
I asked Brian Rolapp about that specifically because there are bound to be scenarios that players can't either support hometown events, could be a national open. So for some reason, the RBC Canadian Open is not elevated to a championship series event. Could be a golf course that you particularly like, or just some tournament that, like the John Deere Classic, that gave you a start and you feel beholden to them for the next couple of years. He said in the conversations that he's had with players, the message to them has been, we are trying to build something bigger than just the individual. And trying to cater all of the PGA Tour scheduling whims to every player's personal preference and characteristics is just an unwinnable task. And so he said that that has been received positively, and those players certainly understand the certain dynamic that they have. As it relates, Rex, to the third part that I wanted to get into that you've already touched on, and that was the PGA Tour postseason. It certainly sounds like the FedEx Cup playoffs as we know it, and that contract with FedEx expires at the end of 2027, is over. And what we are anticipating now in this new competitive model is something entirely different. We do know for sure that match play is coming to the Tour Championship. It sounds like we're going to have two postseason events, but the details are pretty vague outside just having match play at the Tour Championship. At golf courses that the Tour is describing are, quote, prestigious and venues that they have never played before. Immediately, your mind starts wandering to, could that be Cypress Point? Could that be Chicago Golf Club? Could that be Pine Valley? Could that be Seminole in Florida? That's all pretty exciting, but it certainly sounds like the playoff structure that we've grown accustomed to is gone for the foreseeable future.
I'm going to get into the democracy of all this and how this all came about, because I think that's important. We don't need to skip past that. But this is an example of how democracy can be ugly sometimes, because I have been told repeatedly that it wasn't the sponsors or the media partners or even the fans that didn't want match play. It was the players, and the point was very valid. The argument was, we play 72 holes of stroke play all year long, and then we get to what was, in theory, at least in the previous reality before we got to where we are right now, we get to the biggest event and we decide we want to switch it up. We want to go to something else. That did not make sense to players. So that's where the pushback was. My guess is, and my read is, and what I've been told is that you were able to push this through because the playoffs will now be something more akin to an all-star game. But the idea now is you're going to crown a regular season champion, which is probably what golf should have done all along. That if you go head-to-head against the top 130 players in the world over a 22 or 23 event schedule, and you're the guy sitting on top, that needs to be celebrated. You don't need to create something else to celebrate that or to prove that. I think if Scottie Scheffler gets to the end and he's number one on the points list, then that's the person that we should say, yep, he should be the player of the year. We don't need these machinations that the playoffs have become. That allowed Brian Rolapp to sell the membership on the idea that, okay, then we take whatever the playoffs are going to become, two events, you're right, we don't have a lot of details, and we turn it into something more made for TV, where the networks are going to love it, their sponsorship money is going to be there, we finish off the season with a bang. You said they want to start with a bang. Here's an opportunity to finish it off at one of these iconic venues. I love that idea. I love the idea of match play, but this is rooted in the idea of what Rolapp has had to deal with the last 8 months.
And he said now that bringing match play to the Tour Championship is, quote, player-driven. This is something that they wanted. I think they only arrived at that conclusion, to your point, Rex, because we're separating the regular season and what they want to have as sort of this free-for-all at the end. You and I have been screaming for years that what the FedEx Cup playoffs failed in doing was not just identifying the best player all season long, but also having a compelling finale. And now you're separating them, so I think they can actually do this successfully, which is sort of what we'd wanted all along. So again, that's going to be the top 90 who are keeping their card for the following season, and then it's going to be winnowing down because this match play format is going to, again, prestigious courses that they have never been. You're going to have a smaller footprint. You're going to have a smaller field. It could be certainly more intimate, more made for TV. I'm looking forward to seeing exactly what that is going to entail, and that is something we're expecting to hear from Brian Rolapp when he meets with the media again in, at the Tour Championship.
You put words in my mouth. I was not pushing for the match play. And this goes back to, we haven't had this conversation before. No, I have covered.
I'm not saying you're pushing for match play. I'm saying we were pushing to separate the regular season champion and a postseason winner. Trying to shoehorn two things into one. Was it working? It hasn't worked since 2007. That's why they continually were making changes.
And I would argue, and I have brought this up before, that everyone loves the concept of match play. Yes, Rory and Scotty going head-to-head on a Sunday at the Tour Championship sounds great. You just don't get those. And if you do, it's once-in-a-generation type stuff. Go back and look at the WGC match play. Look at the finals. Very rarely do you end up with something that's even remotely compelling. The nature of match play is, by the time you get to that final match, when you want the big finish, when you want the excitement, it's usually a bit of a dud. It's just not the type of format that lends itself to a big finish.
Okay. The fourth and final piece of the announcement on Tuesday was the fall calendar. Again, so keep in mind, the main PGA Tour product is going to run sometime in mid-February through the end of August. In the fall, they're going to have a couple of different options here. If you are a championship series player, you're going to be able to play what they're calling a series of international events in partnership with the DP World Tour, the strategic alliance there. That's going to be a limited series. Think about the Australian Open, Dunhill Links, Irish Open, tournaments of that ilk. Secondly, there is going to be what they're calling a last chance series. I think of this sort of as the Korn Ferry Tour Finals, where you had all season long to keep your to either get promoted or to keep your card. If it didn't happen, you drop down into this series, have to probably play well in a couple of events, and you can retain playing privileges that way. There's going to be a couple cards, just a handful of cards available through that series. There's also still going to be Q School and Access to some of these other tiers under the PGA Tour ecosystem as well. What remains to be seen, though, Rex, as we alluded to at the beginning of the podcast, are these various pathways. The DP World Tour, PGA Tour Americas, what becomes of the Korn Ferry Tour now that it's essentially a third-tier system under the PGA Tour umbrella. I think PGA Tour University is something to be figured out as well. What happens to the top performer in that circuit, whether it's a Jackson Quaven, Ben James type as well. Rapid mobility, though, is the objective with what they're trying to do with some of these fall tournaments outside of the international series, which I think you and I are both pretty excited to see. The Scotty Scheffler, or Rory McIlroy, Xander Schauffele, whoever, are playing in some of these huge events in the DP World Tour.
Yeah, I mean, I spoke with numerous players this morning who play a lot of golf, and they pointed out that I normally play more than 22 or 23 events. So if I'm a tier one player, I'm going to be looking for opportunities in the fall. And this is a perfect way for the PGA Tour to maximize the partnership with the DP World Tour and to elevate these events. That Rory McIlroy talks a lot about this. National Opens should count for much, much more than what they count for now. The Australian Open, we just announced the partnership between the PGA Tour, DP World Tour, and the Australian Open earlier this month. The Indian Open has gained a lot of momentum. And to make no mistake about it, they're paying appearance fees. I understand that. I'm not trying to skip past that or glorify that. But this is an opportunity to not only allow these top players to travel and expose the game and to grow the game internationally when they probably wouldn't, but you're also getting playing opportunities. As opposed for the last chance series, I do like the idea. Because I've argued in the past that Q School has always been the most compelling tournament to me because that's real consequences. Someone either wins or doesn't win the U.S. Open last week. And there's a lot of drama to that, and there's a lot of storytelling in that, but it pales in comparison to what I've ran into at Q School because this is people's lives. If you didn't win the U.S. Open last week, you kind of shrug and, okay, I'm heading on to Travelers and I can pick up where I left off. If you finish outside whatever the magic number is at Q School or in this last chance series events, your life changes dramatically. I love that storytelling.
I love that storytelling as well. I like the fact that they're drawing a hard line as it relates to promotion and relegation. No more of this conditional status and sort of bouncing back and forth and straddling both tours. Keep in mind, there are not going to be sponsor exemptions into that championship series any longer. Brian Rollup did say they're expected to be sponsor exemptions, Monday qualifiers into the Challenger series, but again, not the top tier as it relates to the PGA Tour structure. All right, if I give you one more, Rex, one more open question that you really want to see answered over these next couple months as it relates to the PGA Tour's future, What is it?
How do you appease sponsors? How do you appease media members? How do you appease all of the partners when you don't get 100% participation? Because we know you're not going to get 100% participation. This week being the primary example, Rory McIlroy is not in the field. He has missed three signature events this season. Simply not going to happen. Now, you can probably guarantee something along the lines of 95% participation or even something higher, 97%. And if that's good enough for Travelers and whoever else is involved, if that's good enough for NBC, who's going to be airing this tournament over the course of the weekend, then I think Brian Rolapp is on to something. But he needs to understand, and on the show today, Rich Lerner tried to box me in on the idea that sponsors, media partners, the other partners, they're not going to like this. They want to be able to sell the idea that, yes, on Sunday we could end up with Scotty and Rory. And that's not going to be the case this week as the perfect example. And I kept coming back to the idea that you're absolutely right. And they're independent contractors. And there's no way around that other than going to some sort of contracts, which would lead to some sort of unions, which would lead to some sort of collective bargaining agreement. And Brian Rolapp, who came from the NFL, knows he doesn't want any part of that either. And so what he has settled on, and my guess he's going to move forward with, is the idea that we can't guarantee full participation, but we can guarantee enough that every event, at least in this championship series, is going to be special. It's going to be unique. So I think that's the question I have right now.
Yep, it's going to be special. It's going to be unique. It's going to be significant. I asked Brian Rolapp about that, about if there's any sort of concerns about load management and players taking off a handful of events, as Roy McIlroy has, just to save himself, knowing he's going to be among the top 90 at the end of the season. He said a couple of things, did Brian Rolapp. One, the reason why we have such a condensed nature of the schedule is because we are trying to get the most attention at times where the sports world can actually pay attention to us. I would anticipate the season starting most likely in that bye week before the conference championships and the Super Bowl with the NFL, potentially having Phoenix, which seems to like that Super Bowl spot in that position as well. He said, to your point, these players are not obligated to play. They are anticipating that players are going to take off, and it's up to the players specifically how they're going to do that. It's going to be very interesting to see which tournaments. I think most players need a breather, and if there's just 20 players, 20 top players, but all of a sudden don't show up, there's not going to be alternate lists into these championship series events. So however many players are showing up, that is who is going to play. So, yeah, I think that's one big question, is load management, taking time off. Another one, obviously, is the tournaments. Which ones actually make the cut for the 15-event schedule, the venues, and the cadence? Is it three on, one off? Are the off weeks built around the major championships? Is it before the major championship? Is it after the major championship? We don't know about the off weeks. But right now, Rex, it looks like 23 to 24 events in what could be a 30 to 32 week window. So a lot of golf, a lot of big tournaments crammed into a very short period. All right, that is going to do it for this emergency pod edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. I will be at the Travelers Championship all week. Rex is finally mercifully returning home to his construction site of a house. We'll be back on Sunday evening for a full recap of what is the final signature event of the PGA Tour season, continued reaction, fallout from the PGA Tour changes in 2028, and whatever else happens in the world of golf. You guys know the drill. GolfChannel.com has plenty more of news and updates as it happens. Thanks for listening. Thanks for support. We'll talk to you guys on Sunday night. Enjoy the rest of your week and enjoy the Travelers Championship.